Jebby is up.
Thank you for taking a ride on the Freedom Train podcast series. I'm your host, Joseph Ford, and as always, ride with me is my good homie, Mr. Patrick Irvin. Hey, remember, the Freedom Train is brought to you by PAX Inc. That's P-A-C-T-S-I-N-C. And PAX Inc. is a black development organization aimed at developing the black community to its maximum potential through a focus on education and economics with a trace of hard work, honesty, and integrity. And as you know, for more information, or you may not know, for more information, make sure you visit www.pactsinc.org to get more information about the organization, the codes of conduct, how to become a member, how to donate, how to get involved. And if you hover your mouse over that more tab, you're going to see that learning center. And then if you hover your mouse over that learning center, you're going to get more pop-ups. And when you get these more pop-ups, you're going to see audio. You're going to see politics. You're going to see Let's Make a Pact. You're going to see books. You're going to see survival. You're going to see legal cases. And you're going to see video. Oh, and one site, all you got to do is visit pactsinc.org. I said pactsinc.org. Yeah. All right, Pat. That was cool, Pat. You like that?
I mean, you're bringing in characters from the fix, and you know, I got it.
I'm sorry, it just hit me though. I had a feeling it hit me. So that was Reverend Prettigrew's brother, Deacon Jordan. So what's going on, man?
Ain't nothing, man. Busy working. Busy
for real. What you working on?
Busy. I try not to be busy, but I do got a lot. I'm working on a lot. So
what you working on, dog?
Man. You know, I still got them two books I'm trying to put out, and I'm editing all of that, doing all that myself, since I can't find nobody with no act right. You know, so I got the books, designing these websites, the Pit Web Design, you know, we got that.
Updating
stuff on the PAX website, so, you know, we got that going on with PAX. You know. It's just a lot going on, you know, working on this homeschooling thing and the summer school thing with the people out here, you know, bouncing around town, going to events and stuff like that. So it's just a whole lot going on, man. A whole lot going on right now.
So you mentioned Pit Web Design. I'm sure we got new listeners. So what is Pit Web Design?
Yeah, Pit Web Design is basically, you know, it's a low-cost solution to anybody that needs a website, period.
Right.
You know, so we interview a lot of people on this show, right?
Right.
And they, oftentimes, when we ask them, what's your website or whatever the case might be, they're oftentimes like, oh, but just email me or just hit me up on Facebook or just, you know, hit me up on social media or whatever. And, you know, they don't have a website built. And then when you talk to a lot of other people, it's, you know, they don't have the money to get a professional website. And a lot of people are like Wix or Weebly, all these other places you could go and build your own website for relatively inexpensive. There are a lot of people out there that don't even have the know-how to do that or don't have the desire or the skill or whatever to do that. They see those options and they get intimidated. And then once they buy in, they still really don't know where to go or what they want to do with best practices or anything like that for their website. And web design is big. So what we decided to do was come together to create a low-cost solution for these people so that they could come in. We'll build our websites for them. We'll host it for them. We'll take care of all of that stuff for them. Low prices, low monthly maintenance fees, everything you need, and all you got to do is just sit back, you know, and cut the check when it's time to cut the check. So that's
Pit Web Design.
We named it Pit Web Design. And the website's out there, www.pitwebdesign.com. We done already got a few inquiries in before we even technically opened the doors, but the website's up. So We ain't had our grand opening yet, so all of y'all that come through now, you know, y'all are getting sneak peeks and y'all getting, you know, access to early bird services and stuff like that. But that's what we've been working on, man, and it's been good. It's been time consuming.
That's what's up. That's what's up. Shit. Hey, man, that is what's up. I know myself, I'm continuing to finish up these online courses that will be available soon. Got African History online courses coming at you. There's going to be a lot of information. Each module will have at least six people that you can learn about. Quiz questions, audio, the information coming audio format and text format. Then you have quiz questions with the answer key. So you have all that and, you know, packages like inventors, scientists, musicians, athletes, leaders, politicians, things like that. That's coming in the African History online courses that's coming to them, that's coming through. Also, the first round of editing for On the Shoulders of Giants Volume 3 South America is done. So I have the main script back. So now the ball is in my court to fix the corrections that need to be corrected. So I'm going to do that ASAP and get that back to my editor. So I'll be done with editing. And from there, do a little beta reading and reviewing it to make sure everything is everything. And then get it pressed up and put out, and it'll be available in print and Kindle. So look out for that On the Shoulders of Giants, Volume 3, South America. You can actually pre-order now by visiting www.ontheshoulders1.com. And other thing is this Freedom Train, man. We got this going, this Freedom Train podcast series. I have the Fix Sports podcast. Patrick has Lessons from the Screen. With that being said, make sure you all support us on Patreon. Support Lessons from the Screen, patreon.com. LFTS Lessons from the Screen, also patreon.com. The Fix, also support On the Shoulders of Giants on Patreon, patreon.com OTSOG. So all those things you can support as little as a dollar or as much as you want, but every patron is appreciated. So, you know,
and
Pat, oh yeah, go ahead, I keep yelling your name.
Your new On the Shoulders of Giants website coming out too.
Oh yeah. Redoing this. PIT web design is redoing this. Redoing my own Shoulders of Giants website. So I had two websites in the past. So now moving forward, I'm going to have one website that contains all of my information, and it's going to be Fly. My website going to be Fly. I'm going to have a picture on the front page, home page, with my shirt off. So be ready.
So booyah, booyah, booyah.
For the ladies. And ladies, guess what? I'm still single. Y'all need to get on it. Y'all trip.
Yeah, man. He got you on his vision board. You need to make that happen.
I'm telling you. Hey, man. What's wrong with your boy? I know we don't usually talk about sports like this, but what's wrong with your boy Adrian Broner, man? He is hilarious, man.
Dude is a character, man. I honestly, he's just retarded. If it wasn't him being a character, it's really what's got him selling tickets, if we're being honest, because it ain't his fighting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dude
yeah.
is just a character, though, man. He's a magnet. I just, like, my beef, like, Adrian Broner is good. Anytime you put a camera on Adrian Broner, you're going to get something spectacular. It's going to be phenomenal. It's going to be amazing. You just don't know whether it's going to be amazingly good or bad, but it's going to be different. But dude is silly, man. Dude is extremely silly.
I don't know who was funnier this past week, Soulja Boy or Adrian Broner. I don't know who was funnier.
Well, I ain't seen what happened. Soldier Boy, but I did see the Broner build up in the press conference, the post fight conference. I don't imagine Soldier Boy would
gang gang. That if I ain't Soulja speaking, Boy they ain't speaking. Crack. Gang gang.
Soldier Boy back on crack.
I don't know what he on, but he said I don't know if he was on crack. I don't know what Soldier Boy was on, but I don't know. But
what did Soldier Boy do?
His interview was hilarious. Like he was explaining all the stuff that he's done over the years and how he is the like the godfather of these new internet rappers and all these things here. So it's just hilarious how he was answering questions. Like he didn't, a lot of times he didn't realize Charlamagne was hyping him up to get him to say crazy stuff. And he was either that, either he didn't realize it or he just didn't care. He was just taking the bait. But he got a lot of funny takeaways or outtakes from that. You need to watch it. It's funny. Just for the comic, for the comedic, like whatever that come out of that. You need to watch that. It's funny.
I'm punching it in right now.
So just what to tell him. Hey man, but today we got some topics. You know, most of our topics we try not to be giving y'all disturbing stuff, but it's some crazy stuff that's been happening. So we decided to talk about it, you know. So three topics we're talking about. The U.S. has, over the last 10 years, or from 2007 to 2017, the U.S. has approved the thousands of child bride marriages or unions of old men and child brides. So we're going to talk about that. U.S. soldiers they pled guilty to attempting to smuggle $1 million worth of cocaine from Colombia, which wasn't their first time doing that. And then the third story is a former Erie diocese, and the diocese is a priest. It's like a Roman Catholic priest. And his name is David Paulson. He pleads guilty to sexual abuse for some young boys over a number of years. And, yeah, it's a sick-ass country we live in, man. It's a sick-ass world, man. Let's fight somebody, Pat.
Most definitely. When we get to that story, I do want to make small correction. The diocese is actually the district that a bishop is in charge of.
Oh, for real?
Yeah.
Okay, well, what's this website? Diocesanpriest.com. They lying there.
Diocesan priest.
Hey, because I don't know no diocese is. That's my first time hearing that word. Shit, I went to Rickards, right? I mean, you went to Rickards too, but obviously you was in better classes than me. So
I ain't learned this at Rickards. I learned this after I left.
Oh, good for you. But nah, I'm like it says. I said like I know the diocesan priest with confidence too. Nah, but it says what is diocesan priest from diocesanpriest.com. It said diocesan priest serves ordinary men who are responding to the call to holiness and offers guidance for a question. Is Jesus Christ calling me to be a Catholic priest? So I just took that and created my own definition from that.
No, I think diocesan priest is a particular type of thing. So I'm not saying that you're like wrong or whatever for that. Because I just went to the website right now, diocesanpriest.com. But
yeah.
I think that's a specific, they're talking about is maybe a specific something. I don't know. But
I think I know that.
A diocese is a district under the flock or the leadership of a bishop.
Yeah. So, all you listeners, now you know. No, so don't be giving me bad information no more, you listeners. Now you know.
Yeah, I've never actually heard of it. This website is interesting, though.
It is. It is.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
You think they might need PIT web design help? So you might need to contact them. Like, man, we can make this live. We can have your Mary Magdalene more shiny.
I don't know.
Or whoever your Mary, whatever.
I don't know if I want to build a website that enhances sexual predators' ability to.
Oh yeah, that's right. Then we'll be like helping the R. Kelly shit, so we can't do that.
Yeah. We might have to let the website be ugly.
Yeah, they the religious R. Kellys.
they was R. Kelly. They was Kellying people before R. Kelly got started.
Right. Yeah.
So,
all right, so
are they Kellying people? Kelly priesting people?
He priesting people.
Okay.
Yeah. He's priesting people with his holy tip.
Don't say that, bro.
Too early.
Yeah,
oh, okay.
People are going to get on you about that. That's too soon.
Okay. Oh, well. All right. The thousands, I'm going to read some of this article. Thousands of requests by men to bring a child and adolescent brides to live in the United States were approved over the past decade, according to government data obtained by the Associated Press. In one case, a 49-year-old man applied for admission for a 15-year-old girl. The approvals are legal. The Immigration and Nationality Act does not set minimum age requirements, and in weighing petitions for spouses or fiancés, U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services goes by whether the marriage is legal in the home country and then whether the marriage would be legal in the state where the petitioner lives. But the data raises questions about whether the immigration system may be enabling forced marriages and how the U.S. laws may be compounding the problem despite efforts to limit child and forced marriage. Marriage between adults and minors is not uncommon in the United States, and most states allow children to marry with some restrictions. Without like going all the way in, you know, reading the whole article, they're talking about more than 5,000 cases between 2007-2017 for Homeland Security. They complied. They have a lot of victims of forced marriages. That's what they're saying. They interviewed this one young lady, Naila Amin, who talked about her experiences in this. She was basically saying she was used as a passport, and then they ruined her childhood. It's a lot of sexual abuse, a lot of domestic violence. A lot of these things go on. Now, they did say it was over millions of cases that were brought up, but only like 5,000 up. Well, I'm going to say 5,000. I forgot the, well, yeah, here it is. It says, I just lost my place. It says, overall, there were 3.5 million petitions received from budget year 27 through 2017. Over that period, there were 5,556 approvals for those seeking to bring minor spouses or fiancés, and 2,926 approvals by minors seeking to bring older spouses in. So they have a lot of information backing up that basically old men using young girls as wives, brides, sexual toys, sexual slaves, punching bags, and all these different things. And the U.S. government is approving of these things. So what are your thoughts about it? When you read this article, Pat, what was going through your mind?
I mean, there's a bunch of different angles to this. It's a very complex issue.
It is.
On the one hand, you have America. You have a country who, and this is the area I agree with, a country who is trying to respect the cultural differences of people that come into the nation. So
right.
I get that. But on the other hand, you do have this negative aspect of people taking advantage of it, of people okaying it, of abuse and sexual predation being supported, not enough questions being asked. And like you alluded to earlier, the system or the culture, rape culture itself and sexual predation and the culture of sexual deviancy being supported by the American
right.
government. That's a big problem. And like I think one of the problems with America is that America doesn't have a stated, defined culture. We got a bunch of things we live, but
that's
like
true.
If you read
that's
the Constitution,
true.
Legal documents and stuff like that, there isn't like a stated, defined, like this is who we are, and if you want to live here, you have to be like this.
Fit.
You understand
right.
what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. Because
so,
when you go to other places,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'm just gonna say when you go to other places, even though it may not be stated, you will understand that this is the culture, and you might want to conform, or you're going to be without resources.
Right, and in America, we live in very much a don't judge me society.
Right.
So I think that emboldens a lot of deviancy, a lot of less than positive behavior. And so, like, it's a complex issue for me because on the one hand, America does have this creed of, you know, you can maintain your culture, you can maintain this, you can maintain that. But on the other hand, there are clearly things that are acceptable in other countries that are not acceptable here. And a 49-year-old being married to a 15-year-old is one of them.
Right. That's not cool. Well, the first thing that comes to mind, the American in me says that's not cool. It's not cool for a 15-year-old to be married to a 49-year-old. The American in me. But it takes me back to the conversation we were having in the chat with KG about the different cultures and how in some cultures young women are from day one groomed or even taught and culturalized and cultured and all the whatever words you want to use to be a mother, a bride, a woman, and all these things here. Now, it's a slippery slope because we don't want to give rhetoric to sound like that we're supporting undercurrent cultures of sexual violence. So we're not saying that, but we do understand and try to respect different cultural differences that don't lead to sexual violence, because just because we as Americans may not agree with the process doesn't mean that it's wrong a lot of times. And we could just use our American mind and our American logic to automatically say it's wrong. But I think it's like what we were saying in the chat with KG. If the women rise up and say that it's wrong, then we got to ride with the women because they're the ones that are saying that it's wrong. It's affecting them. So in this, we do have evidence of women saying that it's wrong. So we got to ride with that. At least even if we agree or disagree with the culture, you got people saying, hey, we don't like this shit and it's affecting us. Then as a man, that's what I'm riding with.
Right. And I'm right there with you. And that's why in this situation, I think there needs to be another step added. I think in all cases where you have somebody under 20 that's applying for a visa or something like that for somebody that's over, say, you know, 30 or 40 or whatever the case might be, and they're coming from a location where maybe they were married underage, there needs to be an interview process where both parties are brought in and talked to. And the young ladies in these cases need to be made aware. They need to be made to feel safe and secure, and then they need to be talked to make sure that they aren't a victim of domestic violence, sexual violence, rape. They weren't forced into marriage, you know, physically or emotionally or anything like that. Like, this is something that they're comfortable with, they're not being abused, and they're okay with moving forward. I think if you set those boundaries, you can still respect other people's cultures while keeping the women safe and not allowing things to be taken advantage of. I was reading something, because I do want to say this. When we talk about these things, we understand there's a cultural issue, but in this case, we're hinting at the women more specifically, because I believe somewhere in one of the articles I read, and I'm scanning right now to try to find it, it said that I think it was 90% or more of all of the cases where the women were the younger party.
Right.
And the men were all, the older
basically
party.
The majority of the cases.
Yeah, the super vast, super majority of the cases were women, young girls and young women being taken advantage of. And the mere fact that out of all of these cases, only 2.6% of them were, you know, what, not even out of all these cases, out of the 3.5 million spousal and fiancé claims filed in the span of this entire 10-year, 2007 to 2017, only 2.6% of them were rejected.
Right.
That in and of itself should give everybody pause, because we know that spousal abuse and sexual predation is happening at a lot higher clip in a lot of these countries where these people are coming from.
It is. And we have to, I think that the most important thing that you said was the interview process when you're talking to these young girls. and really, really seeing what's going on with their situation. Because you have to understand that it's a tough situation when you have like a 14-year-old who's married to a 35-year-old. That's different. You know what I'm saying? Like that's different, Pat. That's different.
Yeah.
A 14-year-old with a 35-year-old. That's not cool to me. But at the same time, what was the process for this to happen? Was it a forced marriage? What? Because some of these girls are coming from countries where they do arranged marriages. They talked about a 19-year-old who was who had gotten into an arranged marriage. The young girl that they're highlighting in the article, she I think said like 8 or 9, she was forced to marry her cousin to get him to the United States. But it's just, what are the total dynamics of these? Because I don't just want to straight go off and just kind of shit on somebody's culture and thinking like a stupid American, yeah, like we could often do. But we have to look at shit, well, really what it is. But if these women saying this is fucked up.
Right, and that's where it is, because one of my questions is, because the requirements for this whole spousal fiancé thing is you have to, not only are you supposed to have to prove that the marriage was legal where you came from, but the marriage also has to be legal in the state that you're coming to. And we know that in America, with a few exceptions, it's largely illegal for someone under the age of 14 or 15 to get married. Now, there are exceptions. I think in certain states, a court can approve a marriage of people that are under 15 or 14. But in most cases, it's not legal. So there is something missing in the process where applications are getting through where they shouldn't. But even in America, I think we got to, like, not just as an American government, but as a community of people, we have to set standards for what's acceptable. Look, you can be entitled to do whatever you want, but there's also the saying that when in Rome, do as the Romans do. Come to my community, and my community has certain cultural values and certain cultural beliefs. It's not our responsibility to conform to you. Is your responsibility right to conform to us.
Right.
And so
right,
we make this same argument when we talk about dealing with white supremacy and racism and how black people want to go into a white world and demand that white people accept them as black people. And it's like, no, when you go into a white world, they're entitled to be white. It's their world. You know, if you yeah want to be black, build your own. And so I say the true same thing to when it comes to culture in all regards. If you want to marry a 14-year-old girl and you 42, go somewhere where they do that. They don't do that where I'm at. And if I find out that you done that where I'm at, we got problems. That's not shitting on nobody culture, but that's saying that where I'm at, we live a certain way.
Well, yeah, I ain't gonna lie though, man. It's hard to just be like, you know what I'm saying? Fuck it, dog. You know what I'm saying? Fuck it. Like, this is what it is. It's hard to just say that and just let it go. Because it's like, you still messing with a little girl. You still messing, and so it's hard to just say that. So
no, I get it, because it is a difficult conversation. Because on one hand, you do want cultural relevancy, and you do want your cultural lens to be put aside to look at things objectively. But on the other end, you still feel how you feel from being raised in the culture you were raised in. But the situation here is, like you pointed out earlier, these girls, these women, have spoken out against it. And even to that, I don't care what culture you're in, I do draw a line, even in my cultural tolerance, for physical abuse, physical damage, especially when it comes to like in certain places in the Middle East where they'll throw acid on a woman for talking back, or they'll scar up her face or something like that to let the world know that she's a bad woman or a bad wife. Like certain things like that, cultural relevance be damned, I'm not going to get behind you on that. And so when it comes to sexual predation, anybody being held down against their will to do something that they don't want to do, i.e. sexual intercourse, rape, forced marriage, I'm not game for that. Because obviously the mere fact that she's fighting against it means that it's not something that's totally accepted in the culture.
Right. Everybody don't like that shit. So maybe you need to rethink it.
Right. And so that's where we get to the point where you made earlier where we both said if the people in a culture rise up to protest something happening in their culture, I will rise up with them if I'm in agreement, because that means that it's not accepted and even the people in the culture recognize it as a bad thing. So I can assist in that. If the people in the culture don't recognize it as a bad thing and you try to change it anyways, you become an invader and a colonizer, and they're going to resent you for it.
Right, right. So, I mean, it's understanding the laws of the land, and because you know you always tell people follow the laws of the land. Still want to do that, but we also want to make sure that nobody's being taken advantage of in everything that we're doing, because women and little girls always seem to get stepped on.
Well,
and people try to act like it ain't happen.
I'm gonna say all children, because like when
all children, but just in this particular instance, but yeah, all trust me, because little black boys don't nobody give a shit about little black boys.
Well, you know, I make the thing because I'm like, yo, the world really doesn't differentiate in terms of raw treatment until you become like a teenage boy or girl. That's when gender really sets in. But prior to that, you know, I'd say 11 and earlier, you're just a kid. Boy, girl, it doesn't matter. The world doesn't give a shit about you. The world pretends like it does, but it doesn't. And so that's why you have all these instances of children being abused, coming up missing, being mutilated, being forced to do things they don't want to do. Not just, you know, like as a good parent would try to get your kid to do his homework or eat his mashed potatoes, but like, you know, like a 9-year-old boy don't want to fuck a 49-year-old woman no more than a 17-year-old girl wants to be raped by a 23-year-old man. So, you know, just that thing with kids in general, people just don't give a fuck about kids, especially black kids across the gender spectrum. But you did make a good point earlier before the show started with regards to tying this story into rape culture. And I think that the fact that this process was even allowed to happen is just another example of the fact that America is not serious about preventing
this country is full of shit.
Going down rape culture.
This country is full of shit when you literally have, like, think about it. On one instance, we have governmental officials who are committing these acts, and then on the other end, we got the government approving these shits. So it's approval on both ends. Like, really think about it. It's approval on both ends from the U.S. government, from, like, these old, nasty-ass people, man. Like, that, these people need to have their heads chopped off, man. Like, that shit is crazy, man. I'm going to be fighting all types of people, man. I have some kids, because ain't no way. Look here, bro. You put your... If I even think of, look, somebody's house gonna get burnt down fucking with me. Fuck that. I'm gonna have them carry around a samurai sword or something. I don't know.
I was thinking about getting me a sword. That's funny you make that joke, because I was really thinking about getting a sword.
Man, look at him be walking down the street with open carry.
Right. It ain't no law say I can't open carry my samurai sword.
Right, right. So,
I'll fuck you up real bad with that sword.
Straight up. Like, what's crazy, like, before we jumped on for this podcast, I saw a post about a white boy who raped a 1-year-old. He filmed himself raping a 1-year-old and didn't get jail time. Matt, but notice I say white boy too now.
Yeah.
So you rape a 1-year-old. Wow. No jail time. So, hey. Let's talk more about how the government be fucking up. So, U.S. soldiers plead guilty to attempting to smuggle $1 million
Hello?
They've been able to get away in the past.
Hello?
To make money. So, the first couple. I'm going in and out?
Yeah. As soon as you started reading the article, you went in and out.
Well, let me read.
It just happened again. Hello?
Into the United States. Am I still going in and out? Man, I don't know what the hell wrong. I'm going in and out.
Yeah, well, let me reread. It went out again.
So every time I say something else, it ain't going in and out. But when I start talking about it, it's going in and out. You know what that is? Is it going in and out now?
No.
You know what that means?
The government.
The motherfucking government. So, but I hope it don't do it this time. But basically, a couple soldiers, U.S. military soldiers, smuggling $1 million worth of cocaine. This is not the first time doing it. Daniel Gold, who's 36, and his former Master Sergeant Daniel Gold, who's 36, and Sergeant First Class Henry Royer, who's 35, both Army Green Berets, they were caught attempting to transport 90 pounds of cocaine via military aircraft last year. That, like I said, it's not their first time doing it. The first couple times doing it, they was able to make enough money to buy this allotment to be able to take it back and sell it. So they're trying to be some real coke boys and all these things here. They finally got caught because they're smuggling cocaine in hollowed out punching bags, and they messed around and got x-rayed, and I guess when they got caught, they went to Singing. So this is the military people, man. Like, this makes me think about Freeway Rick Ross in the Contra movement. That's the first thing popped in my head when I saw this when I was reading the article. What about you?
Yeah, when I was reading the article, that's actually what I thought about too, the Contra movement. You know, the introduction of crack into the black communities, the war on drugs, the initiation of the war on drugs, all of that came to mind. And the fact that, you know, they got away with it once and then they went back and tried to do it again.
Yeah. Yeah, because they felt good about themselves.
Yeah. You know, they spent $9,000 on cocaine the first go around, brought it back and sold it off, and they don't say how much they sold it for, but
right.
They sold it for enough that they could re-up with $65,000 and got buy $1 million worth. So you do the math on that. You know,
The cocaine trade is growing, though. Like, they're just saying, I'm reading right now, it says, in 2017, approximately 423,000 acres of land is being used for coca leaf production, which is a 17% increase of volume of land being used from the previous years. So, like, like they said, the report estimated that this would allow for the production of about 1,500. They're saying they got 145.
Estimated how much now?
Say it again. Oh, 125 tons of cocaine, or a 31% increase from last year.
Well, you know, I was watching a documentary and reading a book on this the other day. Well, the other day was actually a couple of years ago. But anyways, And they were talking about how the farmers over there, they grow what sells. And people were asking them, why don't you grow corn? Why don't you grow this? Why don't you grow that? And they was like, look, coca leaves sell. It doesn't matter that you can't eat it. I can buy food because I can sell this crop.
Right.
And so all of that money, all of those drugs are being flooded into the United States because the demand for them continues. You know, it's not slowing. It's not. It's continuing. So
let me ask this real quick. Is it illegal to grow coca plants?
No.
Okay.
Not in Colombia, anyways.
Right.
Not based on the information I have right now. Now, I'm not saying things might have changed because my information is outdated by a couple years. But based on what I know, it's not illegal to grow the coca plant because the coca plant also has some legitimate uses. It's not until you remove the substance from the entire matrix that it exists in that you get a problem.
Right. Well, I mean, this is, but it's like, they talk about the war on drugs, right? And see, this is the shit that makes me mad, though, man. It's like the war on drugs is nothing but a war on black people. You know, the war on drugs, also mass incarceration, all that go hand in hand. War on black people. And black people are at the lowest rungs of the production. Like, at the lowest rungs of the production of this, but it's almost as if black people are the biggest producers or the biggest piece or the ones who really controlling stuff. But black people are the fall boys. It's, I keep trying to tell, like, legit that I come across who they talking about they sell drugs, whatever. Man, you ain't got no planes, trains, or boats. You ain't got no real connects, none of that stuff. You on the low end, and your ass gonna do the most time. Like, black folk get 30 years for this shit. These boys, they talking about getting these boys 10 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, for real? These boys get 10 years. Like, black folk for selling way less get 30 years.
Yeah, I mean, they had 90 pounds of cocaine, over $1 million in street value. You know, and they're not talking about getting no major time, no nothing. And the interesting part for me would be, because you know I did the thing on the criminal, and I haven't looked a lot into this, but I'm wondering, is this considered a federal offense? Because they were Green Berets and the activity happened, you know, across.
It should be considered.
So if it's a federal offense, then that means that these dudes are going to benefit from the tax or the prison reform thing that just passed.
Yep.
So
as
I said in my show on Lessons from the Screen, you should go and check that show out. I did. I understand I was a little bit dry in that show, but it's a good show.
I listen. Just telling everybody.
The show is I wasn't talking to you. I was talking to the audience.
I know. I was just telling everybody.
But, you know, I said in the show that when you read the legislation, it looks like a handout for their homeboys. And these guys, two special forces guys, are about to benefit from that handout because they homeboys.
Yeah.
If it's a federal offense.
Right. But, I mean, oh, yeah, That's right. They did do the prison reform only for federal prison, which is, we got into that. Like, we did talk about that on the show, but only for federal prison. So that means all your little cousins and everybody that you know that I know still going to do the regular time. So, but, yeah, man, I mean, it's just, they get the easy end of it, 10 years. Black folk be getting fucked up. Families, generations be getting fucked up from this, from selling bitch ass crack. These boys got the real shit. So,
yeah, hey, man. Pure cocaine. 90 pounds of pure from Colombia.
Black folk, we need to rethink the dope game. It ain't built for it.
What's funny to me, when you say dope, I think with black folk, we always be talking about weed. You ain't making no real bread.
Selling no damn weed.
Like, you're not.
You have to be selling coke and heroin and shit like that.
Right. Like, let's be real about the shit. Like, I did my thing. I tried to be a dope boy for a little bit. I know. You are not making bread selling weed. The weed man is getting enough to maybe put some on his phone bill. And most of the time, he's smoking so much of his shit that all of the profit he get from selling it go back into fulfilling his urges to smoke. So even the way we think about drugs shows how limited our viewpoint is. Because motherfuckers be talking about, man, I'm going to come up, I'm trying to be the weed man for the whole block.
All right. You don't get knocked, too.
Right, you putting yourself at risk for what, $200-$300 a month? Are you serious?
Well, a lot of times cats don't be rich. Like, if you sell weed and you still got a regular job, your ass ain't no good weed, man. Man, I'm just trying to pay a couple bills. Yeah, you finna go to jail for a couple bills, bitch. Get you a second job.
Right. It's safer. Start your motherfucking business. Write a book. Do something.
I don't know, man. Fuck them soldiers, man.
Hey, but this shit, though. I didn't like this at all with the,
with
the Green Berets. You know, because I am prior military, and I don't have no qualms about saying my experience in the military wasn't great. I'm not proud of my time, and I'm not proud of the way I was treated in the military, nor am I proud of the way I've been treated since I got out of the military. And that's both by people that were in the military with me and by you punk-ass civilians. So, but I do understand that one bad story like this is going to fuck up a lot of people's view of the military, and it's going to make a lot of people that are in the military doing decent things, they're going to have to pay a tax for that. So on that end, I dislike it. I dislike it because these white boys seem to be getting the break. You know, I dislike it because it shouldn't have even been allowed to happen. I'm still trying to figure out how it got through the first time. But it's a lot about this not to like. But I know in the interest of time, we got to keep moving.
Yeah. Fuck them soldiers. They're not all the soldiers, it's them too. And the racist ones.
Go back to your original.
All right, so. Bitch ass David Post.
Yeah.
Former Erie Diocese priest who in here touching little boys, sexually assaulting little boys, and then making them confess about it in the confession. Mess with all type of little boys, and it's a whole bunch of other priests up in these churches in these little sections that's messing with little boys. But we're talking about David Paulson, bitch ass today. He is who R. Kelly been studying. This the church R. Kelly go to.
Mm-hmm.
He got to. Because it's like he's been repeatedly sexually assaulting one boy and attempted to assault another. According to Pennsylvania Attorney General Josh Shapiro, Paulson entered the plea to corruption of minors and endangering the welfare of children, both a third degree felony. He must also register as a convicted sex offender for 10 years. 10 years, he should register for life. Oh, white privilege. That's right. Paulson will be evaluated under Megan's Law to see if he's a sexually violent. What? What's to be evaluated? You got all the evidence you need. Victims were 8 and 15 years old at the time of the crimes. They say one of the guys is now the one who was 8. He spoke out. I think he's 29 now. He spoke out. So he used power and control to sexually assault these little boys, and they were saying basically the diocesan church knew what was going on. They knew what was going on, but they was a part of the cover up. That's why I talk about this in the sense of R. Kelly, because the church and the people in the church knew what was going on, because people was telling and people was noticing stuff, but nobody did anything until recently. Fuck this church and fuck David Paulson and everybody who caught up into this shit, because they some sick bastards.
Yeah.
Man, let's go jump David ass right now.
Look,
you down?
I am 100% on board, because I don't get this church thing. I really don't. I just don't. See, like, I was actually listening to the NPR story when the trial first started for these particular people. They were talking to the attorney and a couple other people on NPR. And I remember as they were reading through the details and they were talking about how the church in Pennsylvania had a system for marking the boys that had been indoctrinated into the circle of sexual predation, so that other sexual predator priests would know which boys they could approach and which boys they couldn't.
Wow.
Like, they had a whole system in place.
So how did they mark these boys?
They gave them, I believe they gave them a piece of jewelry. And they had a system in place for, they would groom these boys, indoctrinate them into it, then give them a token of some sort that they would wear to let other priests know that this person has been sexually abused and is open for more engagements. I mean, in one case, the dude on NPR was talking about how in one of the cases, the parents actually called the priest to the house because their son had confided in them that he had been sexually abused by the priest. And as the parents were in the house talking to the priest was like, I would like to go upstairs and talk to your son. He went upstairs, let him in the room by himself, where he again proceeded to sexually abuse the boy.
Did they walk in on him?
I don't know if they walked in on him, because they didn't tell what the parents did in the story. This was a lawyer relaying the story through an NPR interview.
They need their ass whooped.
I was just like, yo, just blatant disregard and disrespect. And they're doing this stuff. Now, keep in mind, they're doing this stuff in the building that's supposed to be the home of God.
Well, I mean, see, it depends on how you look at God, though. Because if you look at God the way that they look at God, then hell, they white. And then they crazy too. So God gonna forgive them for their sins, though, so they can touch little boys. Because God gonna forgive for their God that they pray to, gonna forgive them. Because it's an all-forgiving God. So touching boys ain't that bad for them. That's why we need to burn their shit down.
Like, I'm the Catholic Church, and I'm not painting Catholics as anything. But that church needs to be.
It's a lot of complicit motherfuckers. Yeah. There's a lot of complicity that goes on within that Catholic church that's been going on for centuries that people have been covering up. And you can get mad all you want, but what you gonna do to stop it?
And that's the beef. And the sad part is a lot of us feel high and mighty because we're not Catholic. You know, we're Protestant. We go to these, you know, Southern Baptists and African Methodists and blah, blah, blah. We go to all these Christian churches. So we feel superior because, you know, and I done heard people say, well, at least my pastor will fuck my wife, but he won't fuck my daughter or my son.
It's like, bitch, you stupid.
How warped that is. But I do want to point
I've
out
heard that
this stuff happens in Christian churches as well. It just ain't been put under the spotlight the way the Catholic Church has.
But the Catholic Church and the Christian Church is the same, because these Christian churches are nothing but branches of the Catholic Church. And people have to understand that. That's why the culture is the same, because it is the same. Catholic Church runs the whole Judeo-Christian canon. People got to get that. Like, the Vatican, they're some powerful gangsters. So, I stopped separating them a long time. It's all the same. Because you see the same shit happening. People are abusing power. Power and control, you got people who are sexual deviants. They're talking about they have to evaluate him, see if he's sexually violent. These fucking little boys. Yeah, he's sexually violent. Fuck you mean? Like, come on, people. But it's the part that always gets me is the help that they get. Like, the people who are part of the cover-up. The adults who are part of the cover-up who especially try to come off as people who are not doing that. I think somebody, like during the R. Kelly case, somebody got called out for being a sexual. Oh, the dude Torre. The dude Torre who do them interviews on BET and stuff. Mm-hmm. He was calling out R. Kelly and the women who he allegedly sexual abuse, they called him out. So it's a lot of this shit is layered, man. This shit is layered, and it's time for the real men and women to stand up and start kicking some ass.
What was the last thing you... Hello?
Yeah, I'm here. You hear me?
What was the last thing you said? I think that was on me.
Oh, I was saying time for real men and women to start whipping some ass. I'm glad you had me to say that again. I kind of wanted to say it again. So say it again. Time for real men and women to start whipping some ass.
No, I'm agree with you. I'm in agreement. I mean, and that's where we're like, you know, we go back to the many R. Kelly conversations we've had. The conversation we just had about the people being let into the country for child marriages and shit like that. At what point, as a culture, do we say enough is enough, this is unacceptable, and we start doing something about it? Look. And I'm actually frustrated about this whole, because we've had these conversations off air about what to do about these issues. And Joe, you say it all the time in The Fix. Whoop ass and get counseling. Like, but here's the misconception. You punish people not for them. They already know what they did was wrong. They need help. You punish people for the next motherfucker looking at them. So that they understand that as a society, this is unacceptable.
Right.
That's why you whoop their ass for all of the kids looking up at them so that they can say, okay, we don't do that because we don't want our ass whooped the way they got whooped. The counseling is for the individual so that they can get help. This shit ain't complicated. These pastors need their asses beat, and then they need therapy. Repeatedly.
Yeah.
R. Kelly needs his ass beat, then he need therapy. Repeatedly. The Catholic Church needs to be torn down because institutions don't need to be punished. They need to be destroyed.
Yeah, because you fucking know better. You fucking know better, and you're taking advantage of weak people. You know you are. Fuck you. That's not okay. And it's just so many people try to protect and cover up. They get defensive. Not my pastor, not my priest, not these people, not my singer, not this and not that, and making all types of excuses as to why they don't want to start supporting the sexual violence and all these things here. It's like, people, you know, we say it time and time again, people don't give a shit until it happens to them. And after it happens to them, they become super activists. And, you could, like, prevention is key. I know we live in a society where everything is about reactionary. You wait till you get something to really think about it. It's like breast cancer prevention or breast cancer awareness. Everybody do awareness, nobody does prevention, right? So those are things like that. But prevention is key. Like, we can prevent these things from happening if we change the way we exist. We have to do a deep cultural cleansing. deep cultural cleansing to change the way we exist as far as allowing the culture of sexual and domestic violence to persist within this country, within these states, within these cities, within these counties. Shit isn't okay. Like, we have a lot of people who are fucked up people out here trying to exist in relationships, trying to exist in this world, and they need fucking help and counseling. And we need to stop overlooking this stuff. It's not cute. It's not okay. Any sexual predators that you know, they just need to be turned in. They need help. They need help. We don't need to let them back into society until they've received the proper type of help. Point blank, period.
I'm with you. 100%.
I mean, there's no way that this should be happening. There's no way. But it is. So,
yeah, I mean, I think we've got to deal with the cowards. And, you know, I've had a lot of people kind of get on to me because they feel like you shouldn't be calling them cowards. But that's what anybody you're a coward. Anybody that's scared, and that's really what it is. It's not that you don't want to. It's not that you don't think it's right. It's not none of that other stuff. You're scared to address the issue because you're uncomfortable with the issue. People are uncomfortable with the prospect that their brother or their uncle or their sister or their auntie might be a sexual predator, a sexual deviant. They're uncomfortable with the fact that their pastor might be a sexual predator or a sexual deviant. They're uncomfortable with the idea that their mother or father or even their own children, you know, or their nieces and nephews. So instead of dealing with it, they just let it fly and pretend like they don't see it. And then they want to ignore the victims. Or they want to, you know, when they do get involved.
Because they're comfortable with the victim being victimized.
Yeah, and then when they do get involved, they want to take a very soft approach to it. Well, I tried to talk to them. I tried to hint at her. I tried to let this person know. I tried to. No, if you didn't try to put your fucking fist through their fucking face and then report their ass to the police.
Can't try
or to somebody, enough. Even if you don't trust the cops, there's got to be some group of people in your community that you can call to take care of that situation to prevent this person from continuing to have access and opportunity to be a predator. There's got to be some situation. If you don't trust the police, you need to take it upon yourself to set up that type of organization for yourself. But all of this, like, if you try talking and it didn't work, the next logical step is physical intervention.
Especially in these cases right here where we have continued sexual deviance, sexual violence, and the victims are always children. Because the first story we talk about young brides, young girls being brides. This story we're talking about young boys being raped. So we got a balance here on this show. It's a balance in this. Ass has got to be whooped across the board. Men and women need their asses whooped. Like, people need to be. People need deep psychological help, emotional help, all these things. Because we keep talking about the cycle. Yes, we know R. Kelly was a victim. Yes, some of these other cats probably were victims. And we're not ignoring that. That's why we keep talking about the deep, real counseling. But you still knew that you were abusing your power to take advantage of people. And for that, you get a whole leg up to the kneecap in your ass.
Yeah, you got to. And everybody that supported you at least get it. At least get ankle deep. At the very least.
I mean, at least bitch slap. You know what I'm saying?
Like, you ain't got to get everything that they got, but you need to get something because of your culpability and your complicity. You know, your assistance. You know, and let's be honest. If you're not saying anything or doing anything to prevent something from happening and you had the ability to prevent it, you are assisting.
Yeah.
You know, you're an asset. You're an accessory to the crime.
Punk ass. Can't be helping that. Can't be no punk ass out here.
So, you know, but we got a bunch of cowards. Look, straight up, I talk to my kids about this all the time. I got brothers and sisters. If I find out where I got, you know, and I got brothers and sisters by marriage, brothers and sisters-in-law. You let me find out anybody that I know is a sexual predator, and I have an opportunity to prevent them from creating another victim. You bet your ass I'm gonna take it. I'm gonna talk to them. If they seem like they're not dealing with what I'm saying, and I'm saying if I feel like me talking to you is a waste of time, then the next logical step is for me to whoop your ass. I'm not going to give you a chance to go and molest somebody else. If during the conversation I feel like we not getting nowhere, I'm going to whoop your ass. And even if we having a conversation and I feel like we getting somewhere, I'm going to still call somebody on you so that you don't have the opportunity to do it again. And I might whoop your ass anyway.
Yeah, you got to catch these elbows and these kneecaps and all to your face and your larynx and all that stuff there. I mean, it just is what it is. I mean, at least Pat gonna talk to you first. I'm gonna slap you in your shit first and then talk to you while I'm fighting you.
It depends on what you did, if I'm being honest. Like, if you straight up just raped somebody, yeah, the conversation is started with physical contact. But if you made an inappropriate comment, something like that, like if I see you or somebody's like, hey, man, that dude, you know, your family member, he 35, he told this 13-year-old girl that he wanted to do something to her. Oh, what? Let me go holler at him real quick. But I think that's a conversation, whereas, man, your family member that's 32 was touching on this 13-year-old chest, are rubbing on in between her legs. Like, that's a different engagement. I got to fuck you up. Or at least try to, because I ain't the biggest, baddest person in the world. You might whoop my ass, but you're going to have to show me. Because at that moment, I don't believe it. You're going to have to prove it.
Well, hey, you're not fighting fair, so why should I fight fair? Like, what you doing to the kids, that you taking advantage of people, so I don't feel like I should come fair to you, so don't expect fair. You might get hit by a car, might get hit with a lamp, you might get hit with a hammer, I might pour some boiling grits on you, I might wait till you go to sleep and super glue your hand to your nuts or something, I don't know, who knows? But why fight fair? You ain't fighting fair, because a lesson has to be learned, and I have to take, yeah, I said that, I did say it. I got that from 2.5 Men when Charlie Sheen was messing with the lady. She super glued his nuts to his legs. So that's a tactic. That's what I tell girls. I be like, man, look, you with this dude and he putting his hands on you? You wanna know how you can stop this dude from putting his hands on you? Get him real drunk. And when he gone out, super glue his nuts to his leg and his hands to his stuff and super glue the shit out of him. And then post some hot grits on his ass while he's super glued. Because it ain't too much movement he going to be doing. And there ain't too much he going to be able to do after that because he's super glued with some sensitive areas. So.
Rubber cement on that ass. I don't even know if rubber cement sticks to skin. But I will say this.
That gorilla glue.
Bring up a good point because women are largely the victims of these things. As you know, men definitely are victimized. I did a show on my own victimization. But I don't like being called a victim. But women are definitely the ones that are predominantly victimized. But I also think women nowadays, one thing I will say about the Me Too culture is I've always said women have more power to prevent these types of things from happening than they realize. Starting with mothers and aunties who are, for most men, the most respected women in their lives. You know, if your mom has a low opinion of you, for most people, that carries a lot of weight. So there's that angle. But from the other angle, we know that it happens a lot. And I don't understand why women in banding. Well, I do understand, but I wish they would have banded together sooner. But even the little things that they let pass. And I'm speaking specifically to women in this case, because men, that's another show on what we need to do. But we, as men, we need to do a lot more to stop this. But from a woman's perspective, the dude that's inboxing you, that's a form of disrespect. That's a cultural thing that allows for other forms of deviancy to exist, especially when you know he's married. and with children and blah, blah, blah. Like I'm saying all of these things are connected on a cultural level. If we set the standard high in all areas, then people will have to rise to the occasion in all areas. If a married man is posting pictures of his beautiful wife, but he's also inboxing you, take a screenshot of that shit and share it on social media. Put his ass out. You know, if you went out with a dude and he slapped you or he spit on your face or whatever, put his ass out. You know, put it up. Make it public. You know, stop letting these things happen in the dark is what I'm saying.
Let me add this part to it. He's not saying across. He's not saying this across the board. Like every situation will be the same. Could cut across the board because
we both
realize that there are some situations where the intimidation and the isolation, all these other factors, are at a great level, and the psychological beatdown of the person is so great. But he's talking about situations where it really hasn't gotten that far.
Right.
In the beginning stages, where it's the honeymoon stages and all these things here. Even if a dude is trying to talk to a woman and you kind of notice some things, just, you know, you can kind of check it at the door. But at the same time, remember, though, these dudes do this to women who they know that they can get away with this with, though. And that's the bad thing. They do it. They victimize people who are probably previously victimized of people whose self-esteem and just self-worth ain't together. And that's the big issue to me of why they don't get put out like that, because they know who to do that with.
Well, I agree with that. I think the issue is all of the women I know have had a dude at least test them. And the ones that do have self-esteem, they check it at the door. My beef is that they don't put it out to potentially prevent the women that don't have self-esteem from seeing it and making the assertion. Like, changing culture happens subtly. Little things like women all of a sudden starting to put out dirtbags, fuckboys, and bitch-ass niggas bands. Little things like that can have a dramatic impact on the culture moving forward in terms of what's acceptable and what's not, what's tolerable and what's not. Because I say this as a man, I didn't realize that the level of fuckish behavior, the level of fuckery, was as extreme as it was until I really started talking to women, and even until I really started talking to other men about what they were getting in their inboxes. I know what I get in my inbox every once in a while. I don't get it often, but every once in a while, I get some crazy shit in my inbox too. But I didn't think... Yeah, every once in a while.
I don't get inbox.
Once a month.
So that's why I'm living vicariously through your inbox.
Now, you know what I think it is, for me anyways? Back when I was, a somebody, I had a lot of attention. And so even now, if you look at my page, like, it looks like if you just look at, like, the subscribers and all of that, I think I still got, like, something like 7,000 or 8,000 subscribers. It looks like I might be somebody. And so I think that's what it is. I think people are misreading what they see. And the only reason I say that is because I know other people who have large followings, and they get women throwing themselves at them in their inbox. Women with men, women with, you know, that are just getting married. Like, it's literally the same thing you see from the dudes when you ask a woman about her inbox. It's just not nowhere near as frequent. But the interesting part of that is, like, I talk to some women who have shown me pictures of their inboxes, and I'm talking about five or six different dudes over the span of 16 hours would be in their inbox.
Yeah.
That's crazy. And now, you know, they're showing me, and when you click on his profile picture, you know, oh, he just got married. He just had a baby. He just this. He just that. Put that out. It might seem unrelated, but the potential shift in culture from that being exposed and the negative backlash he might receive, the other women seeing that, young girls seeing that and knowing that this is not acceptable, And so I don't have to accept it. Young men seeing that and understanding this is not an acceptable way to behave in this culture. And even for the men, if you got women all in your inbox like that, put their asses out too. Since I made up my mind that I would do this, I haven't gotten the inbox like that, but I haven't been on Facebook, social media like that. But I'm just saying, I think there are little things we could do to shift the culture in minor ways when it comes to the smaller issues that build up to somebody having the courage to be a sexual deviant. And I think we're not doing enough on those levels, and we're definitely not doing enough on the larger levels with regards to pedophilia and all of these other things, what's going on with the Catholic Church and R. Kelly and all these other people. So I know I've been on my rant. I'm done. I'm sorry. Thank you.
That's all good, man. That's how we close it up. That's how we close it up. So if you are here with the sexual violence stuff, you support it, and we catch you in the street, you get hands to your face. Because we are serious about changing the culture. Like, we I know we talk a lot about putting hands on people, but real serious work needs to be done to really make this culture of sexual violence go away, because it's ingrained deeply into American culture. It helped America become America. So let's get off the bullshit and really attack this from the root on up. Parting shot, Pat.
Power to the people.
Power to the people. My parting shot is Martin Luther King was more than the I Have a Dream speech. So if you don't like that, I don't care. Go really research Dr. King. So there it is. I'm Joseph Ward. He's Patrick Irvin. And we out of here.
Holler at your homies.